And welcome, 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 dear listeners, wherever you find yourself. Welcome to your Tuesday edition of The Home Run. And obviously, this is where Hamoud and myself, just quickly, you know, also just expecting him a little bit, you know, in terms of just having stepped off a little bit somewhere. We obviously bring you the particularly insightful engagements as well as also the tongue-in-cheek analysis. I rather put it the tongue-in-cheek analysis because we always, you know, factor in things in terms of reality, but then sometimes the satire just somehow emanates and flows through. Don't worry, guys, I'm not the comedian. That's Helmut's full-time persona. But nonetheless, welcoming you to The Home Run, where we always take a look particularly at some of the conversations happening around the country and the world in terms of helping you gain more insight as well as also understanding as to what is the context in many cases and what, you know, where did most of these particular conversations actually stem from. Before we actually start, do remember, guys, that this is the Villager Eve, meaning it's the day before the Villager edition comes out, which is tomorrow, a Wednesday. Look forward to it if you're part of our subscription process. So technically, you know, in terms of how, you know, whichever way you prefer to receive the Villager updates, you can also just follow us on our socials in terms of where we always provide you with a lot of those particular updates coming through. The second scenario is ultimately, do remember, dear listeners, you can listen to us from anywhere, from the comfort of your home, on the Eagle FM application. The ad just before that gives you that particular comfort. This is your drive time session. Many cases, it's not safe to drive and ultimately, you know, handle a handset or device like a mobile phone, but exceptions probably can exist. Not that I'm a traffic law enforcement or traffic expert in that scenario, just to let you know, plausible deniability, it's up to you. But this is your drive time session where we obviously bring you the particularly insightful discussions taking place. In our talk for today, for those of you that have seen our social media poster, which actually takes a look at the event that obviously, you know, was brought to light earlier today in terms of the early morning scoop, as well as also the development that actually, on the same development that actually kicked off yesterday, that being Namibia's AI readiness particular discussion, and obviously the insights that also you would have heard, for those of you that listened to the early morning scoop this morning, in terms of some of the particular extra insights being provided from everyday walks of life, as well as also, you know, civil society, and then obviously the policymakers at hand. There is a unique particular scenario. At least, you know, the report itself, the AI readiness report, was immediately available on digital platforms, digitally. So it's one of those particular, aspects that I'm grateful for, because I always believe I'm a strong proponent in terms of, since we've got the new digital technologies, running, 100, you know, all times of the day, and primarily being geared towards being accessible at any time of the day, that it allows for immediate, constant, at your fingertip information access in that scenario. Now, our poster obviously outlines the subject matter of the report itself. What is Namibia's state of readiness in terms of AI adoption? First and foremost, I know, just to give you an overview, Namibia went on this particular assessment, because it's an AI readiness assessment and monitoring report. This AI assessment, this AI readiness assessment and monitor report is based off a UNESCO framework that was brought in, that Namibia also said, yes, we sign up to this framework, we agree to it, and we'll work from there. Why do I outline that particular scenario? Is primarily that it needed some sort of a policy or policy guidance starting point to actually, you know, sort of like say, now you can start. I know it doesn't sound very innovative. It doesn't sound very creative in that scenario. It looks very structured. It looks very, you know, rigid in the approach. The nice thing is actually that we are now seeing some of these particular SOEs, for example, like NCRST and many of the other particular government institutions actually standing up and taking the foreground and taking the leadership role in terms of trying to establish industry policy or policy for industries, and to help said particular industries, you know, utilize and capitalize on the opportunity at hand. Now, remember when I started that sentence in terms of seeing ministries and government agencies taking the foreground to lead something. There was actually an outbranching thought that stems from this particular initiative. The said particular outbranching thought is one in terms of, do you always need some sort of a policy guidance mechanism as the private sector to actually adopt, bring in, or utilize a new tool for doing something in a different manner? For example, before the car was created, the steam engine was obviously invented. The steam engine, revolutionized the ability for mass transport of not just people, but also goods, and also for the mass transport of extracted, like earth, heavy earth moving, the ability of moving large amounts of earth, from various destinations across the world. I mean, one of the basic illustrations always when you think about the industrial revolutions of yesteryear, and you started the first one, which was obviously right after the spinning jenny came into being, and that other weaving machine in terms of that revolutionized how the textile industry got improved in their own right, was the scenario specifically of transport. Now, at great length, the transport sector has had its own particular continuous innovations taking place. I mean, that's why you don't get just one mode of transport. And even within the mode of transport, that's why you don't just get one specific kind of vehicle in each mode of transport. You don't. You see the inventions, the creations, the innovations perpetuating, pouring through the sweat glands of the creators and inventors, just as obviously, I'm joined by my, I don't want to say better half, because that will make things sound
just
weird.
Why? Just why?
I said I don't want to say my better half, Helmut, but ultimately, since we're a duo, we're like, what's the guy's name? The Mel Gibson and what's the actor's name? And Danny Glover duo, the action duo. What was that?
What was that
movie franchise's name? I almost said Naked Gun, but Naked Gun was Leslie Nielsen. What's the two police officers, the detectives? They were always, like a young old scenario, and they were always like doing weird things. Like Mel Gibson's character was always a haywire character. Well, Danny Glover's character was always like a family man. And invites Mel Gibson, because Mel Gibson has got this sort of like bad boy persona, invites him always to Christmas dinners and stuff like that. And it was like the weirdest combo, but it's actually two actors that completely complemented each other in leading roles.
Kelly the whole show.
There was not this scenario, because in the 80s and the 90s, there was this aspect of two actors have to carry the movie, the script. Their characters have to carry the whole storyline. It's not a discussion of we are using this actor and his or her prominence for selling the movie. Mm. Then you sit with the rubbish that, what was that movie's name? That no one could understand. What was that movie's name?
Movie. I have a list.
There's a whole bunch of them that I even watched. I mean, what was that? Yeah, the COVID, I call it the COVID-19 movie. The one made by Christopher Pratt, Chris Pratt.
Most of the movies that are coming out are all...
All of them right now.
Either sequels or some sort of qual from the old classic.
It's either a prequel before, a sequel after. And in many cases, you can see this is just a movie that's made like, wow, just there. So where I left off, Helmut, just, in terms of welcoming you, obviously, to today's particular engagement was the question sometimes based upon what we're going to analyze for today. Is in many cases, if you think about it philosophically, do you always need some sort of a policy guidance report, like the report that we're obviously analyzing today, the AI readiness report?
Yeah.
Do you always need permission as the private sector to wait on a state agency or a state body or a state ministry to bring out a policy assessment thing. But then you as the private sector, you've already been doing your thing. You've already been playing in your own La La Land, Disneyland situation there, adopting technologies left, right, and center.
Lawlessness.
You know, just going on with your thing. Because in many cases, you'd be saying, hey, listen, I've got the realm of freedom of expression and freedom of adoption and freedom of creation and invention. I don't have to wait for anything. The scenario, obviously, that this report outlines is how ready is Namibia? That's why the word assessment is in the title of the report. How ready is Namibia? Now, when it comes to AI, there's no such thing. Are you ready or not?
Yeah.
You've been interacting with an AI every day. Me as well.
All of us.
All of us have been interacting with some sort of an AI.
Especially, if you're still in school, at any level, especially tertiary, don't ask how ready we are. Just say, well, some of us have been ready. So I think this is where definitions now become important, because, when we say, are we ready for for AI, what are we,
perceiving
as
ready? What are we perceiving as ready?
Are we talking about? Because AI in generally we're already using it. Some of it is, it's installing and, pre-installing on your phone every time. That was last year when, for a lot of, if not all Android users that had an update, and the next thing they know, they had this, Google AI in the phone. I think, what's the name of that thing?
Gemini.
Gemini was in there.
But Google has like four of them.
It's just something that you received with an update.
Mm.
It was there. And
I had it in my email. Yeah. I had it in my, cause I use Google Docs, for writing my articles and and our scripts.
Yeah.
The thing was there as well.
WhatsApp just, WhatsApp also threw one in just a couple of weeks ago.
It's the Meta one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, AI at this point is just everywhere. Every browser is going to have to, at least every browser that I've been using has some kind of AI answer that comes like on top before you get to the website of what you,
It's used, what do they call that thing? They used to call it a predictive searching or predictive, browsing or something.
Yeah.
Because it gives you, as you're busy typing the first three letters of the word, it starts giving you the options.
Like autocorrect.
Autocorrect. Try typing some English words and the one meme I just saw earlier today where the person was like sending an email to your client, deaf sir, instead of saying dear sir, instead of saying hello to all, hell to all.
Someone had to say yes master, then wrote yes monster.
Autocorrect is not everyone's boss. That's why you've got to read before you send. Read before you send, guys. Because you don't want to sit with embarrassing situations. Even from typing too fast,
But it makes for a perfect excuse if you send something questionable to your crush. You can just tell them that whole paragraph is autocorrect.
that has happened to me. you wanted to say the sentence this way and then one word, you just pressed space too fast, the space bar button. You just pressed it too fast because you didn't realize that the autocorrect was busy giving you another option in terms of changing a word. Hey, Helmut. See yourself, explain yourself of what does this sentence mean, Dwight?
From yes honorable to yes horrible. That's how people get fired.
Where you left off here.
So it all comes down to what are we defining as, what are we defining as AI for me? Because, that then would mean that, because one thing that was also emphasized in the report analysis was the lack of regulations and policies to regulate the platform or the sector or whatever sector and platform that is going to that AI is going to be implemented in and more like rolled out on a national level. But
did you see how small the challenges are and the supposed benefits are?
We both know the reality.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get there. We still have the whole show, don't worry.
We have been there.
Yeah.
We've been there with open AI analysis. A lot of, the people that are involved into the development of this language, large language models. I've been pointing out like the reality on the table, with regards to the pros and cons of the mass rollout of AI. And I think this is where I think we are, to a larger degree, we are not really being honest with ourselves. Because AI is, just like any technological advancement is, it's intended, at least from a positive light, to make life easy for the user. So that then it shows that it's, whether we like it or not, and we have seen this before, it's going to come with pros and cons.
Yeah.
And we have, if there's one thing that we have learned from the previous technological advancement, take, for example, the invention of, the invention of a vacuum cleaner was that the individuals that were cleaners and they mastered how to use a vacuum, they ended up keeping their job. Those ones that could not master how to use the vacuum for whatever reason ended up being told, well, what do I need 10 of you?
Yeah, it's the adapt or die.
Yeah, it's a method or die thing that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
not that we're saying anyone is dying, guys. We're sorry.
No one is dying. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the adoption, the adaptation of policies basically goes to show, I think this is actually one of the biggest undertaking any country that is not directly involved in the development of this technology. This is a mammoth task that we have to face because AI is not, AI entails a lot, under the AI umbrella.
Yeah.
There are a lot of companies that are developing this technology.
And many people don't know, they're actually competing with each other.
Exactly.
For being the most preferred AI destination.
This is one of those things that's going to bring up a lot. I think even in the framing of policies that will regulate where AI is going to be applied, which from the look of things is going to be pretty much everywhere, energy, health, education, you name it.
Yeah.
What that goes to shows is the technicalities in the legislations that's going to govern this industry will have to be very specific.
Exactly.
Now, and then the biggest question I think that's going to pop up is a jurisdiction one, because Meta can easily tell you that, well,
if you're going to have a data protection law that negates or is seemed as threatening my AI product, they can withdraw the AI product from your WhatsApp in Namibia, and then your WhatsApp doesn't function.
Yeah, and we saw that, I think it was earlier this year when Meta was threatening to withdraw out of Nigeria because of the legislations that they were passing, which Meta was like, this is not going to work to my interest. Put in mind, these are private corporations, and just like every business, profit is the business, because for the business to run, it needs to make revenue.
Mm.
So if the source of revenue is threatened, and you don't have the market capacity to sort of act as have a competitive edge in that debate, then you are not, you don't have a very strong ground to stand on. I'm not saying it's a waste of time for the, for UNESCO and basically the, the Ministry of Education and, NCRST to have done this. I mean, it's a brilliant idea. Because it's we were talking about when was that energy security that took place in London, was that in February?
Yeah.
One of the things that
it was that conference. You're right. That conference. Yeah.
That conference. The application of AI into energy generation. One thing that was pointed out was that energy generation infrastructure is becoming more sophisticated because we want more efficiency now. With the inclusion of, take for example, a green energy or green energy generation methods into the overall energy infrastructure, it's just difficult for someone to do, to be crunching the math on a piece of paper every now and then, because that's going to take forever. Yeah. Looking at the infrastructure that you have to be dealing with. So the inclusion or the addition of AI takes the burden of the of any job that needs to that could be done manually.
Yeah.
So including in technology, brilliant idea. But you also what that you also know what that means. Someone is going to lose their job. That's one.
Yeah.
Two.
plus, no one really knows to what extent would the disruption be, Helmut.
Even though
you and I, we did the World Economic Forum's Future of Jobs report,
yeah.
We looked into the analysis there, and all the Future of Jobs report cited were the jobs that will be impacted. So to go and do a job market census, or let's rather call it like an employment census, not a labor force census, mm-hmm. like what we've got, to literally go and assess how many people factor into each of these job categories that were impacted according to the WEF's Future of Jobs report, and then see how many disruption will take place there. That is the kind of sense, you know, you get more niche, you get more unique and more intricate in the analysis. But we also don't see that.
You know, when we were preparing this discussion from yesterday, one thing that I remember, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was you or HD that pointed out that, why are we talking about, AI policy when we have a large sector within the tech industry that is, still remains unregulated? Like, we don't have a lot of policies around it.
Actually, we need laws around it, not policies.
We need a lot.
Yeah.
So before we get to AI, it's like, we are doing the other way around. We want to skip, access to information, cybersecurity, for example, and go straight to AI. Well, guess what's the biggest problem with AI?
Cybersecurity.
Misinformation, cybersecurity, and you name it. So, laying the foundation here would be a brilliant idea before we get there, because it's like we are skipping high school to get to college.
Yeah.
Year one is mostly
related to high school work. Yeah.
You must have a high school background for you to find a lot of year one information or introduction, foundation, tertiary information, to be more familiar with it.
Which is a very good example to use. Why? Specifically, Hamoud, let's take the aspect of the authors, or let's say the sponsors of this report. So what I mean by sponsor is meaning someone who gave funding in terms of being able to do the particular exercise. So one of the sponsors on the back of the report, if you've ever seen, I donated the physical copy to David. I'm sorry, Hamoud. I was, going to leave it there for the rest of the studio to also access it. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to utilize the digital copy of the thing.
Yeah.
If you go to the last page of the thing, not the page on the inside, that looks like the cover page, you'll see the Japanese government's logo is there, because the Japanese government has been sponsoring much of the readiness assessments across much of the developing countries in the world, because they all signed up for this UNESCO framework that says first assess yourselves in order to so that you do this, and the Japanese government has supposedly been sponsoring this across the world. If you go ask your Google search, does Japan have data protection legislation with provisions for AI? It'll tell you yes. Does Japan have cybersecurity legislation with provisions for AI? It'll say yes. So we are sitting with products, these mobile phones.
Yeah.
These computer appliances in front of us here in the studio. We're sitting with products that are manufactured somewhere else with extensions in your country where your country doesn't have legislation, which technically makes Namibia, you've heard of gray zones. I know in law they use the term gray zones. In terms of, the ambiguity, the unclarity, when people don't know where a specific kind of an action falls.
Red or hot. So you are in the gray area.
Yeah. It's the same thing that happens in commerce and in business as well. Business people love gray zones. They love.
Because they are very easy to exploit.
Because there's direct monetary incentives.
Yeah.
And the incentive is immediate.
Yep.
These import cars here in Namibia, when it happened, it was an incentive to the consumer. the guys in Botswana and the guys in Durban didn't realize where all these Namibians are coming from. They just know there's a Namibian showing up with 30 to 50 cash, 50 grand cash, saying, hello, I want that car. And they drive the car. Later on, those guys realized that they kept, because the Japanese guys exporting the cars to Africa, yeah, to these two destinations I told you about, yeah, they later on heard that their contacts in Botswana and in Durban, South Africa, were hearing, no, there's a bunch of Namibians driving all the way here with loads of cash.
Ooh.
And then what happened? They realized, you know what? Let's go and see Namibia. And then they realized there was technically some sort of a, if you can call it like a market domination taking place. You could only go through certain particular fixed channels. Mm-hmm. Now, the gray area was based upon no one knew what was the landscape in terms of you being able to import a car from another jurisdiction. There were guys coming from the UK on those working holidays programs. Mm-hmm. I know, because I had a bunch of guys that also, I knew a bunch of guys that also went that route. I also wanted to go that route after matric. And then I heard the horror stories. The guys were being beaten up. That's
ouch.
Yeah, you just accidentally looked at the wrong chick over there. Oh, sorry guys for that term. You looked at someone skewly, let me rather say, like in a broad term, or you approached someone's perceived girlfriend over there. Guys were beaten up, yo. But the opportunity was boundless for those Namibians. You could make a living and feel like a king when you come back to Namibia with British pounds. Some guys even brought back the cars that they drove that side. They shipped them here. But the downside was the car was not meant for Southern Africa.
Oh.
But it was nice.
It was meant for snow. Now you're bringing it to...
Not just snow.
Yeah.
It had certain technical components, meaning your engine could collect dust issues quicker.
Which is
quicker.
Something they don't have that
time. Yeah. Add brake, guys.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes for Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
So we come back, dear listeners, and ultimately welcoming you once again to the home run session here on this lovely Tuesday. I know we saw a little bit of clouds. If you are in the interior of the country, you might have been a little bit confused in terms of the weather itself, but that's our winter for now. I came from a particular engagement earlier today where the one person said they are happy for climate change. I stood there with, should I object to that statement or should I somehow agree to the ambiguity in that statement, because I can't be grateful and thankful for climate change because it makes life more volatile for us, the ants on the surface of the earth. Yes, guys. It's just symbolism. Just think about it. But anyway, where we left off, Helmut, obviously was a notion in terms of, the definitions.
Yeah.
Here's a problem with that, statement.
Yeah.
It's not an absolute issue. You are correct.
Yeah.
Under whose definitions should we operate? Because if we had a Namibian creator inventor right now creating a Namibian AI program, the question that would pop up immediately was, whose data sets would that AI program make use of? Does that Namibian creator have to go and ask permissions from the UK, South Africa, the AU countries, the South Americans? What level of negotiation would Namibia have to do with these other countries so that this one AI operator has the opportunity to, you know, see how far and how well their program works? Or is it a scenario like the American tech sector, which already knows that they sit with great monopoly across the world?
Yeah.
I mean, Meta products, Google products, Amazon is now into the space. The other one is the ChatGPT guy, OpenAI's people. Because they realize now, they dominate the internet space and the technologies associated to the internet space currently. Whose definition would we have to subscribe under?
Yeah. That's the question, because I think, let me just say for developing countries, and that's, you know, take India and China out of that. You know, among other countries that basically have a significant, you know, presence in the tech industry. But for countries like, countries like Namibia, for example, we are looking at a lot to do. Now, that's, you know, just take infrastructure, for example, you know, this is where I think the technicalities now will give, you know, the lawmakers that are going to be shaping the laws to regulate this industry, you know, they're going to have a nightmare.
You know, but that was some vinegar on that statement, Hamid, because I have not heard any of the lawmakers or seen any statements in Parliament regarding AI.
I will give you an example.
Okay. I'm talking even about the opposition party members, because those guys are still debating upon red line and whose cattle is going where, and employment, unemployment on one side. Hence the reason for my reservations. I'm not impressed with the intellectual quality showing up in Parliament.
The thing is, look, I've watched the U.S. Congress, you know, interview the CEO of TikTok. You know,
last year's engagement.
That whole thing became a comedy show really fast.
Yeah, because the whole internet was laughing at them. The Congress guys.
You could tell that these are lawmakers that will, you know, that will have most likely valid points to make when it comes to everything political. But when it comes to tech-oriented stuff, they have no clue. One of them literally asked if TikTok could connect to his Wi-Fi. So to which the CEO went, you can just see that a homeboy was about to say, how do you think this whole thing works?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where, you know, a lot of lawmakers across the planet will have to sort of like outsource that. You know, they will have
their thinking process. Their thinking capability.
Like the explanation. They really need to bring in experts who will have to explain something to them in like kindergarten language. You see the biggest, Dwight?
Yeah.
I was, you know, there's a video going viral of the Ugandan finance minister, defining cryptocurrency. The money that floats in the air. Now, that's the wisdom we are dealing with. Look, you have to you really have to understand that when it comes to technology, there's one guy, I think that was last year, that explained technology, that when it comes to technology, you have to split the users of technology like into three main categories. They are they are digital natives. How to put this, when it comes to a smartphone, for example, most of the Gen Zs are native to this technology because they were born and raised around it. Now they are digital immigrants like you and I who had to immigrate from a Nokia 331 to smartphones.
And we can actually give you PowerPoint presentations of our earliest exposures and how we advanced. Actually,
that's why we
feel like Darwin, you know, in Darwin's theory of evolution.
That's actually the beautiful part about, you know, about you and I, because we have, you know, we can use a Nokia 3310, and we can use a smartphone all at the same time.
Yeah.
But, the people, you know, but, the digital, you know, I don't want to say immigrant, you know, the people that, you know.
Nomad. You want to use my nomad? Because nomads.
I think that's also, that will be referring to more like in.
Why don't you just say digital migrant, Howard? Yeah. Because we were migrating through every phase.
We were migrating. Yeah. But if you look at the people that were, that were born, you know, and this is basically for the most part, most of the lawmakers across the continent.
Yeah.
Minus the president of one East African country, you know, the one who babysat Adam and Eve. This one African president in, you know, West Africa, who was there when Noah parted the Red Sea, but he's still president. But the thing is.
Okay. I understand now.
Thank you. But look, the thing is, those people.
And he still wants to stand for president.
Oh, he's running until 2020.
So he said yes.
He is running.
Who said yes on his behalf?
It helps if you are the boss, you know.
Other people just talk on behalf of you. Signing checks for you.
Homeboy can barely walk. I mean, it's in the word, running for president. But look at it, what you have here is that this all different sort of like, you know, different users of technology goes to show you how much knowledge they have about that tech. The reason why you and I sort of like have at an advantage is because we know, I mean, we have an advantage. We were exposed to both technologies. We can use both a smartphone and a 3310. But the people that do, that grew up with, you know, landlines, you know, the ones that you have to spin with your finger.
I also saw them. I also use those things.
Now, the thing is, it's very tricky to sort of like, it's sort of like more of a steep learning curve for them to transition to 3310 and then smartphones.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to see, you know, if you want to dumbfound a Gen Z, give them a 3310. They have no clue what to do with that thing.
No, it dumbfound them by telling them, did you know that there was something known as dial-up internet? They were like, huh? What's that? You could hear the ringtone in the internet. You could hear the internet. You pressed a number and you heard the thing dial. And it goes like, grrr, grrr.
Yep. Now,
that was the weirdest thing ever.
At the place where I was staying, you know, where I was staying last year, I had a housemate. I was born in 2003. He found out that I don't have a Facebook app on my phone. I use the browser for most that's for most social media platforms. And he asked me, okay, how do you access all these platforms without without an app? I'm like, there was a time when there were no apps.
It was just you and the internet. And Mozilla.
Yeah, you didn't have to say yes to a bunch of things for, you know, to install this app.
Yeah.
And, there was a degree of inconvenience associated with it. But it also came with a large degree of safety because you didn't have all this, you didn't have to worry about storage because, when you're installing all these apps, they're taking up space on your device. And you didn't have to say yes to a bunch of things that, was collecting your information for, for targeted advertising.
Yeah.
This goes to show that we're going to have to, and thank you very much for bringing that up, because we're going to have to be very creative on how we frame the policies that regulate technology, because most of the lawmakers we have in parliament don't know how the technological world operates.
I mean, Hamut, they didn't even challenge the Minister of Health on her statement of... No, there was one that challenged the Minister of Health on the statement of AI ambulances.
She was just trying to take my job at that point.
But the minister herself was obviously speaking of a wish, a mission, a vision somewhere. Which was not something that was going to probably happen today, tomorrow, even next year. But obviously, as you know how other politicians from opposition always are, now it's the opportunity to throw chili sauce on a statement somewhere else, and you're like, why are you reacting?
But it's a good thing you made that point, though. The point of, the knowledge of technology, especially when it comes to lawmakers.
Yeah.
How does the EU pulls that off? Does everyone in the EU Parliament in Brussels understand how technology works?
Yes, Helmut. Yes. Here's the weird thing.
How do the Americans do it? Because I watched the TikTok, TikTok CEO. That was a catastrophe.
You and I already also summarized last year the lobbying aspect. Just like you've got the tobacco and the gun lobby and the Israel lobby, there's also the tech lobby. And there's even an agricultural lobby.
They do.
They've got an agricultural lobby as well. The lobbyists obviously pay for lawmakers who are on certain particular committees that have to go, and because their standing committees work a little bit different than ours. Ours goes and looks at have an oversight function. In America, in the US, these committees have insight into how a piece of legislation has to flow and to be framed. And obviously that's how the lobbyists come through, because if a lobbyist was tapping on the shoulder of a lawmaker sitting out there in the rest of the plenary session to say, hey, listen, we want you to drive this thing or to oppose this particular thing, you could see the obvious bias or the obvious particular influence.
So does that mean that, so most policies or laws are going to come in pre-framed from the lobbyist? And
Do you remember the Big Beautiful Bill thing that Donald Trump was promoting?
Yeah.
He's technically his socioeconomic policy bill. Do you know what were some of the things, the accusations coming about? There was a provision, because the thing is like 1,000 pages long,
yeah,
that bill. There's a provision somewhere, 90-something or 89, section 89 or something like that, or 90-something, which was put in literally like at the last 11th hour of situations, which people were like angry about. They were like, where did this thing come from? It wasn't in the previous drafts. Where did this provision come from?
So just urgently throw it in there because.
So there are delaying tactics to wait until the last hour of something. And then someone just goes like, let's type it in. And then the rest of the floor of the house did not agree on this provision coming in. So when the last final draft comes back and you are thinking, I'm just going to the section where I have to see whether or not my corrections were or my contributions were factored in, which were voted upon or agreed upon, they realized at the last minute. That's most what happened to many of the Republican politicians who went. Have you heard of the town halls in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Where the guys are being torn up by their own constituents. Like the one guy that showed up in a town hall session where the one gentleman is asking, so if the United States, if the president of the United States can threaten a judge and say he will not follow a court order by a judge, does that mean I don't have to pay my $2,000 traffic fine from a police officer?
Yeah.
And if anyone knows what that means, but before we continue, guys, we've got a short ad break.
Lawlessness 101.
Yeah.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Vintage Original, or Vintage Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
We come back from that quick break, dear listeners, and we quickly step once again into a short ad break. New short courses available from Velvicha University. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education from the School of Science program. Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution. Admission requirements are Grade 12 Senior Certificate or equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or a Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus a 2 years relevant industry experience that will be required. The course cost is $5,500 Namibian, and the application period is from 1 August to 31 August 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462 or email admissions@wu.edu.na. Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. Coming back, guys, from the extended break right there. And obviously, this gets us at least like 5:15. You're on the home run. This is your drive time session with Dwight and Helmut, or Helmut and Dwight, whichever way combination. Made a little bit of a faux pas at the start. Helmut told me not to use that phrase once again. I'm not, Helmut. Don't worry. You know, we are not there. We are not there. But anyway, getting back onto the aspect, Helmut, of the definitions, the discussions.
Yeah.
Now, the readiness report obviously looks at what does Namibia have in place, what Namibia does not have in place. What is cited here is a discussion of, specifically because in the foreword of the report, there's obviously the Minister of Education's particular take. I would have also probably looked for a foreword from the Minister of Information and Communication Technology, because primarily this seems to be front and center under her mandate.
Yeah.
But when I saw yesterday at the launch of the particular report that no one from MICT was present, I was like, isn't this an MICT thing?
Yeah.
But then you realize NCRST technically, which NCRST fell under Ministry of Higher Education. And obviously since Ministry of Higher Education and Ministry of Youth and Sport were absorbed into Ministry of Education, Arts and Culture, which made it now that massive super ministry. So now you can see the three ministries now in one. Minister of Higher Education had NCRST and NCHE under it. NCHE is the Namibia Chamber for Higher Education, the one that is supposed to measure the impact and effectiveness of higher education in Namibia. And then you've obviously got NTA, that was the other side of higher education's landscape in terms of looking after vocational training.
Yeah.
So NCRST was obviously now sort of like the research proponent in gathering the research and analysis based upon what is Namibia's level of readiness. This was obviously under the mandate or under the scope or focus of MESAC. The particularly interesting thing to factor in is that the report cites, there seems to have been progress. I'll call it the positives. Stakeholder engagement. But I'll ask you today, Hamoud, what level of stakeholder engagement actually this was? Because in the methodology, it outlines it. It speaks of, let me first get that thing before I, you know, throw people under the bus. And then people will be like, we're waiting for you, Dwight. There were interviews. There were online questionnaires. There was desktop research, most definitely. There was AI landscape review workshops. And there was a workshop on the ethics of AI usage. The limitations of what was seen was low response rate, specifically, in that the online questionnaire had a low response rate. I don't know who was contacted in that regard because I did not see something personally. Mm-hmm. All it describes here is that it had a low response rate with only 11 out of 104, 140 invited stakeholders participating, resulting in a 7.86% response rate. 140 is your 100%. And if you translate that into a notion of what is it, what does it look like out of 100%, 7.86%. Now, this is an assessment report, Helmut, meaning they were probably trying to make contact with as much stakeholders. I know. I'm also there. To understand, you know, what inputs can be given from said stakeholders.
Yeah.
So this is not a negative on the side of the government or of the SOEs or the functionaries of the government or agencies. This actually shows how we Namibians in the other side of life, which could be the private sector, didn't take this serious. We don't have this industrial revolutionary component as a focus. We don't take it serious.
Now, the level of collabo that's required here is actually, well, large scale, because this all is going to come. One thing for sure is that information has always been available, right?
Yeah.
But AI, basically, technology has enabled, the mass gathering of information. And now information have also, proven to be very important, especially, which is why, a lot of these tech companies keep getting being sued for sharing their information with with marketing companies for targeted advertising.
Yeah, the analytics guys.
And we see that it's slowly we saw that was that in 2018 with Cambridge Analytica and, and Facebook, aka.
Wasn't it 2017?
Was that in 2017 or 2018?
Somewhere. Yeah, one of the two.
Cambridge Analytica is one of the biggest, information leak or more like information misuse campaign. And, I think it was either last year or early this year, Apple in Europe faced the same problem when they had to, I think, spend millions in fine for using, I think it was Siri Siri to gather information for basically, the same use or, selling it to independent third parties for whatever it is that they want to use it for. And mostly, most of the companies that are interested into paying millions for this information are marketing entities because they know that they can pay millions for this information, but when they use that information in marketing, they're going to make billions out of it. So obviously having the infrastructure that gathers the information and stores it is going to become very, 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 very important. So for me, that's where the subject of infrastructure now becomes very central to this discussion. Because regulating something that's being stored somewhere in Silicon Valley is the reason why we have a problem regulating social media platforms.
Exactly.
And now, AI is like 100 levels above social media platforms.
Yeah.
And it also requires a lot of investment to build and maintain, especially with regards to energy and cooling. So the more expensive something is, the more expensive also you're going to have to pay for it.
Yep.
So this is, this keeps bringing up the discussion of when we sit down to make these laws. Making the laws have always been easy, but enforcing them. The information is being stored somewhere in Silicon Valley. You're trying to enforce that information here. You're trying to enforce and regulate the laws here.
Yeah.
That is going to bring up a lot of diplomatic tensions.
No, it is. But I actually want to draw you back to the start of something as well, where I left off in terms of the low response rate that was cited, in terms of the readiness assessment.
Yeah.
Now, remember, Helmut, when you and I went through the industrial baseline survey study that was conducted by Deloitte.
Deloitte, yeah.
Now, obviously, what I want to show here is a scenario of being as diligent and as thorough as possible to such a level that you ensure that you actually have got as much buy-in on the subject matter at hand. Remember the response rate for the stakeholder in response.
7% out of the 100% that was expected.
7.8% out of 100%. The baseline survey. Now, these are two completely different sectors, but AI will have a role to play in extraction service sector.
If it hasn't already.
Yeah. So just to show the differences in terms of thorough market research. The IBS, and I'm using the shortened report, not the larger one.
Yeah.
The shortened report. This was in the executive summary part of it. The stakeholder communication they did. Now they noted that they did extensive desktop research. There were two levels of research that they had to do. Extensive desktop research, and then it was stakeholder communication. For stakeholder mapping engagement, which is sort of like overlapping. Not overlapping, but actually advancing the level of stakeholder engagement so as to show to any reader of this report to what extent did you engage in the economy.
Yeah.
They had 425 post interactions. So that potentially could be social media posts. 99 airings on 9 radio stations. 8 major newspapers, were cited as being used for communication. And 3 town halls, meaning webinars, were utilized, and 1 interview on national TV. Translating it to the mapping of stakeholder engagement, they had 434 stakeholders that were identified in 7 categories. 254 supplier survey responses were received, 254. And 45 supplier site visits were conducted. There are 33 interviews with non-supplier stakeholders, which actually they translated and, to describe their analysis, a comprehensive analysis that combined both quantitative and qualitative approaches to assess local supply chains and workforce and estimate key gaps and local content potential. When they had to look at online server responses, local goods and service providers. Remember that graphic that showed you the little truck, public sector, training. It's this little graph. You remember this little graph?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as you can see that next to, they identified that there's a total of suppliers and the needed responses. When they looked at, how to map these people, industry associations, they knew that there was 11 industry associations. They got 11 responses, meaning 100% out of 100.
Yeah.
When it came to financial institutions, they identified 8 institutions. 3 responded, or 3 technically provide financial services and can participate in the sector. So it's not just about the responses as well. They also analyzed the products available. Other, which was a 1, which is an enable a learning, coordination, and development of talent development and local industry, they identified 1 entity, and that 1 entity was sort of like cleared or was assessed or was considered 100% out of that. So it's 100 out of 100. When it came to oil and gas exploration and exploration E&P companies, they identified 4. Collaborate with stakeholders for profitable resource extraction. 4 out of 4. So when they had to go and when these guys had to go and look at an economic side of things, it was, you could literally see the permeation of thorough, diligent industry analysis. Local goods and service providers and services suppliers provide direct and indirect industry support in the industry. They identified 377 market participants. 254 of them can participate. So they went and interacted with the people on the ground and asked them, do you think you can sell in this thing?
You're thinking and participate in this economic endeavor.
Ministries and public authorities or public and local authorities, they identified 913. 9 of them can regulate, oversee, and govern the operations, policies, and environmental aspects. And these were the stakeholder engagements and in-depth interviews and even online surveys. To sit and you tell me in a readiness report, Hamad, which is a global thing brought to you by UNESCO, that you've got a response rate of 7.8%.
You know, that
and it's the reason why I told Helmut, I'll tell you now. I saw that Deloitte, the baseline survey prompt, the ad on social media. Yeah. I saw it. I knew about it. But before we continue, we've got an ad break creeping up on us.
Do you want to stand a chance of winning a 500 Namibian dollar gift voucher courtesy of ShopRite USave? Then simply tell us, what is the ShopRite Namibia website? Send your answers in a WhatsApp message to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. Tune in this Friday from 1:45 to hear if you are this week's lucky winner. You save, I save, we all save at USave.
We come back, guys, from the quick break right there, and you're in our company, the Home Run Squad, the Home Run Team, the Home Run Duo. We are not Starsky and Hutch. We are not Danny Glover and Mel Gibson. Well, we probably could fit in with a Danny Glover and Mel Gibson scenario, but we'll have to coin toss who will be the married man and the older guy or the wild gun with the, you know, with the wild hair.
Hang on a second. What's that? Was that a lethal weapon?
Yeah, that's the movie franchise.
I got a reminder from a movie fanatic of mine.
I actually enjoyed Lethal Weapon, all of them.
One of them is a Family Guy responsible, and you have another deranged former soldier, and bringing all the military tactics into policy
and the craziness.
Oh yeah,
but then if you ever go and watch Eddie Murphy's Beverly Hills Cop, you know, Axel Foley, where one of the running jokes was, Axel, how did you get your surname Foley? Because it was an Irish surname.
Yeah.
So yeah. Fun times. If you guys ever watch the 80s movies, guys, you'll find a lot of sarcasm in those movies.
I know. Actually, I'm a huge fan of 80s and 90s movies because you know most of the and the early 2000s, because from there everyone just went politically correct and then just the humor left out through the window.
Yeah. So, just setting the scene, Helmut. For example, like. The groundwork of, what do they call that thing in research? Research methodology, meaning how are you going to capture the work?
Yeah.
It seems like there was a plan. It's just, if you indicate to me low response rate was that the online questionnaire had a low response rate. Okay, good. You need to record it.
What about other methods?
Like limited stakeholder representation, which was the second one, meaning, while efforts were made to include a diverse range of voices, most responses came from government, academia, and the private sector. As such, perspectives from civil society, youth, and marginalized communities may not have been fully captured. Now, how they went about doing this? the online questionnaire was an online questionnaire based on UNESCO readiness assessment methodology. Instrument was distributed to 140 potential respondents that included stakeholders such as offices, ministries and agencies of the government, public enterprises, SOEs, academia, meaning universities, and private sector. But to what extent private sector? Are we talking about banking? Are we talking about transport? Or are we just labeling private sector as broad as possible, just the IT service provider? Yeah. Total respondents were 11. They represented a response rate of 7.8% out of the 140. The respondents included private sector, academia, government, and public enterprises. And this was augmented with interviews. The interviews, critical stakeholders, were identified and interviewed telephonically. They were 8 in-depth interviews with institutions such as government institutions, academia, regulators, public enterprises, and the private sector. I beg to differ that there's only 8 people in government. I beg to differ that there's only 8 people in private sector, Helmut, that you can talk to, or entities. I beg to differ that there's only 8 people you can talk to in academia. Do you know why I say that? Go and look at a university's course offerings. Every course there has the potential to impact with AI usage. Yep. So you would have a dean of every school talking about how AI can impact the learning. What is that thing that Uncle Bonner likes to use when we talk about education, that term pedagogy, pedagogical, you know, the method in terms of how you teach someone. Pedagogy. Well, I'm not so sure about the term right now.
No, I've had,
because it's not pedagogy. I know that. It's probably pedagogical or pedagogy. Every dean of each department in a university would have had to have a say because a vice rector can be representative here, but each school or each course does their own research.
Not just that. Now that you have taken it to learning institutions, especially high institutions, the global problem as it stands, especially with regards to AI in learning environment right now, is that it's going to be it's becoming a little difficult to assess, for lecturers or basically educators to assess their students' potential, their strengths and weaknesses with regards to the course that they're doing.
Yeah,
why? Because there is a huge application of AI.
Yeah.
Every time, every time an artificial intelligence platform is built, sort of like OpenAI's ChatGPT, for example, can be now a lot of students have been using it to sort of like take a shortcut with regards to completing their
I spoke to a learner this morning.
Schoolwork.
Yeah.
Now, and then there have been sort of like there are tools that are being developed to sort of like flag any type of pattern that shows the use of AI in any academic work.
Yeah.
But well, guess what? There are tools that are being built sort of like mask the AI use in any academic work so good, it's difficult for the detecting softwares to detect it. So you have a race going on in that department alone.
Mm. And so, that's just in ICT.
That's just in ICT.
Yeah.
That's just in learning institutions.
Then you need cybersecurity in ICT as well, in terms of who's using AI to hack who, and who's using AI to put up firewalls, defenses, and cyber defenses in that scenario. Then you've got to come to research and development in terms of R&D.
Oh dear, yeah, that.
You even go into R&D. There's R&D even happening in R&D.
Look, the point I'm trying to make here is that for educators, you can imagine they're around the country, they're all just looking at this and going like, you know what? Well, it's about time we start regulating this environment, because there's right now it's just the wild, wild west.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Now. And then you are looking at, as an educator, you really want to impart the knowledge that your students basically are paying to study. Mm-hmm. But realizing that they are taking shortcuts that are so sophisticated, it's very difficult to flag.
Mm.
The best you can do is just, to start giving them credit they don't deserve, which is why I ever since I came, came to know that, I decided to start eating healthy, because a lot of, you know, doctors that are graduating by using AI, they'll be using, you know, Capion and the operation table, and can't tell the difference between a scalpel.
All you hear is just the knife going.
I'm like, huh?
What are you doing? No, I got my PhD from Gemini, you know? Gemini what? Gemini University. No, Google Gemini.
So as you can imagine, this, you know, regulating it is a good thing.
Yeah.
Not just for the private sector and, you know, energy generation, medicine and all that, but also in education, because that's where the first more like negative use, more like, you know, negative use of AI, negative application on a large scale is being witnessed is in high institutions. So, I mean, it's so bad that, some lecturers, especially, I think, are introducing something known as blue papers, where we are, you know, we may as well just do this the traditional way, where you have a pen and a paper. Because it's hard to tell, like, but in most cases, especially in high institutions, it's very easy to, sort of like see, because if you have, an average performer writing Shakespeare type of works, then you know that something is fishy here, especially overnight.
Especially if you know what their English looked like before somewhat polished works show up. You should see how journalists are being embarrassed. Remember that discussion we had here back in, was it May and June?
Yeah.
About the AI usage in journalism. Remember that report that we discussed? Do you know what was the funny thing while I was sitting there recording?
Yeah.
So the presenter of the report from the DW Academy indicated, he first said, so guys, please tell me the sub-editors, you guys, how do you guys pick up if a journalist is using AI? A lot of the sub-editors were said, words are being used that they never used.
So you have moved from a comfortable lifestyle to flamboyant lifestyle.
they went from what are they went from exaggeration to hyperbole, stuff like that.
That's when you're like,
They went from sky blue to tangerine. They start using weird terminologies that they never used, because you're told in terms of telling a story to people. Many cases, if it's like a story based upon a factual event, keep it short and sweet, you know, get to the point. If I ask you, if you now went outside and you saw an accident happen, and I come out and I ask you, Helmut, what happened? You'll say, Dwight, that car drove into that car, creating that scenario, which is what you're seeing right now. There is no such, the oncoming car. I would have asked you, who's the oncoming car from which direction? Because do you understand the extra information sometimes is not needed, because the people are seeing, I see the result. What happened?
In other words,
that guy hit that guy.
In other words, what you are looking for in someone's work to try and find out whether they have been, you know, using AI is, you're looking for, you know, their degree of verbosity versus before and.
That's why I left out that word. You are using someone else's word there. They'll even come.
Well, it's not patented. So when that guy gets out of that whole
Please leave verbosity alone, please. That English word does not fit.
Verbosity.
What does the word actually mean?
Is it
overdoing something?
The overuse of, it's basically what you described.
Hyperbole.
The overuse of words that are, you know, you could have just used simple words. It would have been.
So it's hyperbole also.
In some ways,
And if you read hyperbole in there, you would go hyperbole.
Oh, been there, done
you
that.
You would read that word hyperbole, and you're like, what word is this?
Yeah.
And then you would type it in terms of, what does this word mean?
Pronunciation?
And then you see the pronunciation thing there on the Google descriptive goes like, this is how you spell it. Oh, this is hyperbole. But you see.
Hyperbole. You know, they're now basically describing kitchenware that's excited.
Exactly. Because what's wrong with exaggeration, overdoing?
You would have just gone with that.
Or overdoing something, or excessive, because excessive is also exaggeration. What's wrong with those terms? You see what English does? Do you see what English does sometimes? And even to know all these various words that mean the same thing.
Yeah.
I was going to use other colorful language right now.
Yeah. Well, today is the 12th.
Yeah. Hey, we're not fair. Okay. The 15th is only Friday, you know. Yeah. I was going to say you might want to congratulate your.
No, not yet.
Yeah. Not yet.
Yeah. I barely forget that.
But you can remind them on Friday, you know, that Wednesday is not far. Next week, Wednesday.
Just hang in there for dear life.
But yeah, so.
Yeah, so.
The exaggeration, you're right, Helmut. You are completely right in that scenario because I, in many cases.
Just don't understand.
I don't understand. But. No, getting back to the research, yeah.
When it comes to information sharing, one thing that my contract law lecturer like to point out is that, what you're studying has a lot of jargons. But the people that you're going to be working with on a daily basis, the people that will be requiring your services, will want you to break it down in simple language.
They want you to get to the point.
Yeah.
Don't waste their time.
I mean, because they are not there for you to show off that you have this qualification.
Well, if
they are in some legal trouble, then you have to explain to them in plain language. So that takes us back to who's this, Einstein, who's made one of the most controversial statements in information sharing, that if you can't explain something in simple language, you don't understand it.
Mm.
Yeah, unless you can break it down in very simple language. Mm. Now, I think this brings us back to the framing of the legislations that will regulate tech. Mm. Wasn't it this year, I think about last month, when Donald Trump sort of like promoted, I think it was three or four tech, tech guys. Gave them some type of military ranks, like colonels or something.
Helmut, just hold on. We'll quickly have an ad break.
That iconic taste of Heineken, loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken, loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. At ShopRite, we're celebrating 35 years of lower prices with unbeatable deals. Let's mark the occasion with savings on essentials like 2 kg nice rice, parboiled rice for just $39.99. 250 grams Nescafe Ricoffee instant coffee, only $69.99. Valid until 17 August 2025. Don't miss out on these deals. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust, always. Stand to win your groceries for free at ShopRite. Buy any three participating products. Find the unique code on your till slip. WhatsApp it to us and see if you're a winner. Plus, there are instant daily prizes to be won. Only at ShopRite.
Now, as we come back, dear listeners, Helmut, where you left off specifically about the tech guys that Donald Trump was promoting.
This was in June. Yeah, there are four senior tech executives with a very, interesting enough, mostly Western names that are, from OpenAI, one from Meta, and the other one from, from Thinking Machine Labs, who were given a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve. Now you have Andrew Bosworth, I think, from Meta. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that, that name right. And you have, Shyam Sankar from Palantir.
Mm-hmm.
Palantir, that company is very controversial in the
tech. Yeah.
You have Shankar from Palantir. You have, Bosworth from Meta. You have, Kevin Well of OpenAI and, Bob McCrew of Thinking Machine Labs, and they were given these are tech guys, and they were given the rank of lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve in June of 2025. Now this again brings us back to the discussion of how lawmakers, when especially those ones that don't have a technological background.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are they going to make laws that will regulate an industry they don't understand? Which sounds like a very, a very sophisticated task until you realize that these are the very same people that are making laws that regulate the financial industry, and it's just equally complicated.
Yeah.
The question is, how are they doing that? I think, asking that question is going to help us understand how the people that don't understand, technology on a technical level are going to, to make laws that will regulate the industry, regulate the industry.
Or they will have insight.
If they have insight. Even
remember at the start of the discussion when I told you about the lobbies?
Yeah.
Yeah, they will have insight.
Well, the lobbies, I think that's where you are going to begin to have a lot of problems now, yeah. Like the one that the U.S. is going on right now. One of the biggest trend going on, especially coming out of New York, is a music festival.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not a music festival; it's a mass protest. A lot of them have noticed that when they were letting each other know that there's a mass protest going on, basically across the basically across the U.S., especially with regards to ICE, the immigration issue that they have there. They realized that every time that they used to, mass protest and words like protest in their videos, the algorithm suppressed the presence
of that video.
So
yeah.
They had to play around with the words. So they started using
music festival.
Music festival. Then the whole thing just went
haywire.
Yeah.
Well, it's also a way of tricking, but that's obviously the things in terms of human nature where they always find a way to curb things. Because we all obviously know that Twitter, which now became X, was one of the biggest platforms in terms of how mass protests were mobilized.
Yeah.
Here in Namibia, we had the same example, specifically the SGBV protests of 2020. The downside has been, Helmut, if a tech or a billionaire decides to buy a social media platform, they can actually implement their own particular sort of like community rules.
It's private.
Or aspects in terms of saying, hey, listen, certain particular activities are not welcome on the platform, like encouraging violence or inciting violence or inciting some sort of mass action in protest of a government policy. Now, the downside is, Helmut, leave the billionaires to the billionaires. It's their landscape.
No, the reason why I brought that up is the reason why I started with that, my favorite fun fact story in the script.
Yeah.
Yeah. The display on your telephone, it turns out, the reason, that was our early days in the technological world of combating sort of like, cyberbullying or scammers, for example, for online security.
Mm.
We created a display so that people that were being called, if they had what they called a special telephone back then. Turns out if your telephone had a tiny display like the one for your calculator, it was called a special telephone. What they did not know was that there would be a smartphone. The whole thing is glass. Yeah. The reason why that was created was so that people that were being called can know who is calling them by just looking at the number. Then they can decide whether to pick up the call or not.
Yeah.
And that was initially intended to sort of like, call it an online security at the time. But how'd that work out? Now, the reason why it took a while to roll that out, because it was delayed for almost a month, is because there were a lot of people were against it, because they said, that would be a sort of invasion of privacy, showing people's numbers everywhere. But today, that's pretty much standard. Everyone that you call is going to see your number, unless you have these whole new features that are being brought in by some of these service providers that will allow you to sort of like hide.
Like Truecaller. Is it from Norway or Denmark?
Truecaller.
Yeah. Truecaller is
very excellent niche, but look.
Yeah, obviously it is.
Yeah, but when it comes to apart from the, you actually busted a very big bubble that I walked in here. That is.
I didn't do anything. I just went like my mind always jumps.
It's just the number of the people that were expected to contribute to this report, and then only about 7% of them showing.
I mean, I fail to understand, Amut, how, because if you bring out a readiness assessment, if the high school teacher asked you, Helmut, as a learner in the class, kindly go in, count how many classmates you have that are currently in the class. Let's say the teacher walked out.
Yeah.
And the teacher told you, come with me. You follow. And then everyone sees in the class, as we know on high school what happened. If you see the teacher leave, you'll always get those that feel like they're very liberal and have, now it's freedom of expression everywhere. Some of them would start walking out of the class and getting up from their seats and stuff like that. And the teacher told you, Helmut, go back and go count how many of your classmates are still in the class. Now let's say the number was at that stage back in high school.
Yeah.
The standard number was 31 or 30
classmates.
And let's say the teacher anticipated, since you had to follow the teacher, that there should be, let's say it's 30, 29 classmates left. You get back and you count 12. That level of feedback would have told the teacher. Obviously the context is something else, because then it forces the teacher to act. Because that's a call to action exercise.
Where's everyone?
Yeah. But the call to action speaks similar to this response rate of things. We know that there are other higher education facilities in Namibia. I still want to know the breakdown specifically, the responses. Because just lumping that 8 responded from all these brackets. There's not just 8 ministries of Namibia in Namibia, Helmut. I would like to know how Minister of Gender would have a strategy in operating their everyday affairs for women and child affairs, vulnerable persons, marginalized peoples.
With AI.
With AI. Not OPM deciding for them, and then their IT guy, their Minister of Gender, says, I don't understand the subject matter, it's outside of my field of expertise. Even though OPM is supposed to be the lead agency.
Yeah.
But still, OPM would have to go and ask every IT guy in each ministry, every IT department in each ministry, are you guys, what's your level of being equipped? What's your level of readiness?
Mm-hmm.
Every SOE.
Look, I think that partly answers the question that I've been having basically since you pointed out. Turns out we are terrible with sign language.
Yeah. David is even laughing at us. Sorry guys for the small silence that you heard there. That was just us, miming things out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were terrible.
We could have been guessing.
There was just a lot of fingers being pointed at each other. I'm like, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So, and that is, the legal framework.
Yeah.
If you look at lawmakers, and this is not just in Namibia, this is basically the world over.
Yeah.
Was that about 1 or 2 years ago when when the Japanese, I think that was the Japanese cybersecurity minister, if I'm not mistaken, that went viral.
Mm.
Because he was kind enough to be honest that Russia set you free. He did not set him free. When he said, he had never used a computer before, and everyone was like, well, isn't that the safest way to be? that's the safest way anyone can be from cybersecurity.
Yeah.
But if you're going to run an organization, that raises a lot of questions.
Like what? How are you writing your... Hey, no! Helmut! Hey!
What?
No. It's a light bulb moment. I always watch these other particular interesting things of how other people travel to other parts of the world. There's a guy that outlined. Now, I didn't believe it, but actually it was, because you always have to read the comments when people post videos on YouTube. The one guy highlighted a few reasons why it's difficult for a foreigner to work in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Helmut, they don't have this thing, this swiping function that we apparently have in Japan. Like a debit card.
Yeah, like when I'm going shopping?
A magnetic tape debit card. Yes. They don't have that situation. It's all cash. Apparently at the ATMs, apparently Japanese ATMs are like stuck in 1970 something.
Why?
You can only watch your balance. You have to go into the bank.
Okay, but the Japan is one of the most tech advanced country on the planet.
They were innovating left, right and center.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Why?
It's to protect the currency.
Oh.
So the system, the financial system, is kept at such a basic, non-advanced level, but a partially acceptable level, that in some cases it's even difficult for them to do EFTs.
Yeah, like
online transactions. Even though they've got online stores, you know.
Yeah.
And they've got an Amazon Japan. And they can buy from China.
Yeah, up there, yeah.
They can buy from China right here. Apparently, but it was one person's perspective. No one else had shared this particular perspective, so I still have to do my own little desktop research in that scenario.
Yeah.
Which is mind-blowing. And you know what's the worst part? You have a card for withdrawing the money from the ATM, and you have a card to check the balance.
Oh, no.
You get a little book that looks like, apparently, like a checkbook. It's your balance book. It's like a little book.
I don't know how to do that.
And you have to go into the bank account, into the branch. Uh-huh. So the bank literally, it's like, what's that thing's name? What's the verification that the police do? Not conduct certificates, the other one, man.
A certification?
Certification. Yeah. It's like certifying.
Oh, dear.
You have to go, every time when you apply or do something which has a government requirement that you need a certified document somewhere, you have to go to the police every time to verify, to certify. It's literally, supposedly, a mechanism like that.
That's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
Look, I totally understand that, convenience and security don't go hand in hand. And I think that's the reason why if you look into the, if you look into the military, things like guns have been kept strictly mechanical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things like guns have been kept, strictly mechanical because, we have, it's very simple to, to think of at this point. We have wireless everything. We have a computer chip, there's a computer chip in a lot of things that we use on our daily basis because everything is becoming smart. But it's kind of difficult. If there is even any a smart gun, because, well, if you are going to be part of the military, for example, you are going to be working in the environment where having a computer chip in your gun, I don't think there's any military personnel who will be like, okay, you know what, I'm going to use one of that, because computer chip, things that have a computer chip are not known to be very good at dealing with rugged environments. So
certain particular, like, computer chip, hardware.
Yeah.
They don't like dust.
Exactly. So I understand the simplicity, because with simplicity in terms of operation also comes with the simplicity of use. And also brings up the simplicity of, simplicity of repair and simplicity of maintenance.
Which actually also reinforces why there's a saying that the best technology is the non-digital technology, meaning longevity. If you're talking about the ruggedness,
talking about longevity.
Yeah, longevity of the technology is technology that has no digital aspect to it.
Yeah, actually, I think I totally understand that. If you look at it from, who is this? These Toyotas that are used mostly by, is it NGOs, especially by the United Nations and a lot of intergovernmental organizations around the world.
Mm.
They are just...
you're talking about the Land Cruiser.
They're made in Japan.
Yeah.
But for them to go to be exposed to the rugged, unforgiving environments that most of them find themselves in, they have to be taken to Gibraltar, the English overseas territory in the side of Spain.
Mm.
Now, that's where they make sure that they rip out everything electronic.
Mm.
They make it as basic as possible so that even if you have a breakdown in the middle of the Sahara Desert, you can just, throw in a garden hose and you can just soldier on. Now, the thing is...
Garden hose.
What
does a garden hose do?
Well, I don't know. Maybe there's a leakage somewhere there. You just throw in a piece of a garden hose and you can go on.
Yeah.
But the thing is, what those, those Land Cruisers are exposed to the environments that a lot of cars are never exposed to. So if you take any ordinary Land Cruiser in those environments, your car is going to suffer significant damage because it's not made for that environment.
Mm.
So obviously that also goes to show that, if you want something to, you know, if you want something to last and be strong, you want to make sure that it's as simple as possible.
Yeah.
It's as basic as possible. So, now when it comes to the, coming back to the blueprint, more like the layout of technology, of regulations to govern technology.
Mm.
That, I think, brings up one sort of like a question-ish type of statement for me.
Yeah.
That's, take the GDPR, for example, coming out of the EU. One of the most, comprehensive sort of like, template. That anyone can base, online regulations or internet laws on. That document is a piece of work.
Hamoud.
That document is an amazing piece of work.
Earlier this year, I wrote an explainer in the e-paper regarding the EU's AI Act. Remember when you and I did the analytical report based upon the introduction of the EU's AI Act? Remember, back in, I think it was June? That we did that discussion?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in June.
Yeah. And then I wrote an explainer based upon, what can you see or look into this particular notion of the EU's AI Act. And the EU's AI Act was actually came into force in 2024 last year. And just like CBAM, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, it gives stakeholders in an economy a whole year to get themselves ready for when the legislation becomes active, or it activates, because they count a whole calendar year.
Transition period.
Exactly. Now it's the same thing with the CBAM. The assessment report of Namibia, this AISS readiness assessment report, cites that EU AI Act. It cites the US AI something. Act, there's also an act there from the US, and not once do we actually note or mention or indicate. Okay, we do cite it here, but in terms of, as I said, looking at lead agency, lead ministry, it's Ministry of Education that takes cognizance of what else exists in the rest of the country, in the rest of the world versus primarily, do we have to develop something new? Do we have to come up with a new thing? Do we have to do something completely outside of the box?
Something that is suited to our environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these particular thinking, the AI particular development discussion readiness concept, if MASAC, the education ministry, the super ministry sites, they recognize that they are leading things in the world that they can base a similar particular scenario on. I have one final question. Does this actually mean that MASAC will lead the AI legislation making since it's their report? Or will this be bounced back to MICT, who's been taking 15 years to sort out a data protection legislation, a cybersecurity legislation? Who was not even in charge?
The ICT people are not there.
I also don't know. I also don't understand why they were not there. But UNESCO, which has education in its science scenario and science.
Yeah.
What's the CEO again in UNESCO? United Nations Education Scientific.
I think I've been dragging it.
Commission
as,
or?
I think I've been dragging it as a UNESCO for a very long time. I've never even thought of a.
I keep forgetting what the CO stands for.
Oh no, I keep mixing things up.
Yeah.
I keep mixing it up.
So, the E and the S in UNESCO.
It's a United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization.
So it can.
It's a mouthful.
It entirely falls in the mandate of MASAC.
I keep bringing up, cultural and then education. The scientific one just keep, skipping out of my head because it's UNESCO. Because every time someone says UNESCO, they've all mostly been associated with cultural things.
Yeah. But here's
and education,
the,
yeah.
But here's the thing, Helmut. Last year, when you and I also had the particular, remember the discussion where, our current Minister of Education, when she was executive director, went to Geneva for that, education and digital introduction thing, the one about using internet and computerized things
in schools.
In schools. Yeah. Remember the mapping exercise that you also cited in the audio that we had here?
Yeah.
That was ITU. ITU also has an education program under it in terms of the rollout of internet services and education platforms. The Ministry of Education was there, not the Ministry of MICT was there last year. MICT was not there, but MICT sits with data protection legislation, with cybersecurity legislation, but Ministry of Education is doing miles ahead of sort of like industrial analysis. MICT did no such analysis.
Okay, maybe I'm just jumping to conclusion here, but for me, that I think reinforces my point of view. Reinforces sort of like my perception of agreeing with the Office of the Auditor General on ministries working in silos.
Yeah.
Because
exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Helmut.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about regulations. Okay. Now, this is just my personal point of view on this one. If we're talking about policing a certain industry, I would expect, take for example, the ministry that has a large mandate, especially with regards to the roles that it plays in that area. Like, if you're going to talk about cybersecurity, if you're going to talk about anything technology, it's kind of difficult to leave ICT out of that, because they're literally information, communication, and technology. And if you are going to talk about regulating it, I would expect a few maybe representatives from the Ministry of Justice.
Mm.
Yeah,
they are also missing, because they are supposed to be looking into lawmaking.
Yeah, we're talking about policy making or lawmaking to regulate a whole sector that's actually less understood by those of us that are not tech savvy.
Yeah.
Look, on the techie savviness, that was a bug for me for a while, until I came to the realization that, okay, you know what, regulating the financial sector in Namibia.
Mm.
And the financial sector is one of those sectors that are very sophisticated for those of us, that are not exposed to how that world works. So we have these laws and the regulation is going just, it's not 100% perfect. Mm. There is no such thing, but the regulations are there. Mm. The regulations also in the in the tech world can basically can be made somewhat the same way. You don't have to have a whole a whole parliament of Edward Snowdens for you to make to make laws regulating technology.
Edward Snowdens. That's what you want to go with, Albert. Stealing state secrets.
Look, homeboy dropped out of school.
Yeah.
And then mastered computer so much, he worked for both the NSA and the CIA. You can't be dumb and do that.
That's the same thing also with like Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg
didn't even complete his entire, IT degree that he did, that he was busy doing at, what was it, Harvard or Yale?
I think it was Harvard.
He didn't finish it because he came up with a business idea while being second year or third year in university, and
with the right connections.
Right connections.
Check.
Voila, stole a business idea from the Winklevoss twins. the two guys in the movie.
That's why I think it was one of my lecturers that liked to point that out, that before you start using Mark Zuckerberg as an example to drop out of school, ask yourself,
whose idea can you steal?
Which school are you dropping out of? And which school is Mark Zuckerberg drop out? You can't drop out of Umukuru Development Community High School. really have to go.
Almud, no, man. Oh, yeah. But on that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end. Stay tuned for the business economics segment. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. That's Almud and I, in terms of bringing you your drive time session, in terms of engagement, discussion, and analysis on that scenario. We are really analyzing, guys. We are two serious gentlemen.
Yeah.
Distinguished gentlemen, distinguished. It's questionable.
Yeah, distinguished gentlemen. But you forgot something. All protocol observed.
Yeah, all protocol observed as well. But we really do analyze things for you, because we do really give you the ins and outs. Not that we are reading intestines in any kind of witchcraft manner, but nonetheless, we'll see each other again, same time, same place. Enjoy the rest of your programming in a company and stay tuned here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, throughout the rest of this Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Good evening, dear.